Bibles tonight and turn to the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 31. And I will admit right off the bat, this is not going to be like my favorite Bible message ever. It's along the series of worship, and I've had some questions in the past about this, and kind of put it off, and I really needed to actually address it. So, the title of the message tonight is God's Design for Dress. God's Design for Dress. You say, oh, come on, a message on dress? Well, is God interested in every aspect of our life? Yes, He is. Dress is kind of a part of our life. It's important. Does God say anything about it? I believe yes. And so that's why I feel like we need to dress. And it's interesting in the context of worship in 1 Timothy, we'll look at in a little bit, 1 Timothy 2, in the context of worship, dress actually comes up as an issue. Over the years, there has been quite a bit of debate, and this is just right up there with music, you know. This is such a controversial topic, because if you ever say something against music that somebody likes, then you've just personally attacked them. And I feel like dress is right up there with music, you know, very controversial. If you say anything that somebody would disagree with you, then you're obviously wrong, because you disagree with me. And I do recognize this truth, that principles, biblical principles, do not change. But application of those principles can sometimes change. With changing culture, with changing time, sometimes things that were once perceived a certain way may not. For instance, now this is before my time, okay? But I guess when the Beatles came to America, there was a lengthening of hair and a growing of beards, and for a time in our churches, it was kind of anathema for a man to wear a beard. In fact, to wear a beard was kind of a sign of rebellion. It was not in any way associated with godliness, it appeared. And so for a time, it was, boy, men did not wear beards if you went to a conservative church. Now, by the way, Jesus wore a beard, right? And he's just about as conservative a person as I know, right? But there are times when beards may have been associated with certain things, and I bring all that to as an example of sometimes clothing styles change and associations change over time, and what once was not a problem maybe becomes a problem, or once what was a problem is no longer a problem. And so I want to address the principles first, and then make some applications later. I think, though, the overarching principle of all ought to be this. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, and let's take a look at verse 31. Whether therefore ye eat or drink or whatsoever ye wear. Now, that's not what the text says, but we can include that, right? And whatsoever ye wear, whatsoever ye do, wear all or do all to the glory of God. Now that, by the way, I think is a very legitimate application of this text. Whether therefore ye eat or drink or whatsoever ye do, that includes what you wear. And I'll just confess to you, I am a human being. I'm a man who can make mistakes. I'm not all-knowing. I am not the Pope of People's Baptist Church. I'm not the Pope of anything. I am a husband. I am a father. And therefore, I have to prayerfully make decisions that sometimes maybe people don't agree with. And yet I as am responsible as a husband and father, and I'm also responsible as a pastor. Say, okay, what is best? What will most honor and glorify our Lord? And again, sometimes too, we make decisions. In fact, I was just talking with somebody the other day. They were telling me about some decisions that they make as a family. And then they're quick to say, now, these are choices we've made for our family. We're not expecting everybody else to do this. But this is what God has led us to do. You know what? That's wonderful. That's great. You know, as a church, we may make some decisions. This is what we're going to do. Maybe this is the kind of music we're going to sing or not sing. We're not going to be shooting at everybody else around the world, but that's what we feel God wants us to do. And the same thing when it comes to maybe some applications of dress here. We want ultimately to glorify the Lord in everything we do. That's my heart's desire as a pastor, and the very fact that you voted me in as the pastor, I trust that you would agree that that is also your desire. And so I want to look, first of all, and there's four main principles we want to take a look at, and then we'll use those principles to make some application. I invite you now to turn over to 1 Timothy chapter 2. 1 Timothy chapter 2. And I believe this passage that we're about to look at takes place in the context of worship. Because you have here chapter 1, verse 18, "This charge I commit unto thee, son Timothy, according to the prophecies which went before in thee, that he should be holding faith and a good conscience, which some having put away concerning faith have made shipwreck." Verse 1 of chapter 2, "I exhort therefore that first of all supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings," etc. That drop down to verse 8. "I will therefore that men pray everywhere, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting." And so here's an expectation that Paul has for men. To lift up holy hands means that they ought to be living a holy life. That their prayer life would come from a sinless, a holy, none of us will be sinless, I know, until we get to heaven. Look forward to that. But should come out of a holy life. These men should not be losing their temper. They should not be quarreling, creating disputes. So we're talking about godly men pray. Now, the scene shifts. Verse 9. "He wills also that women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with broided hair or gold or pearls or costly array, but which becometh women professing godliness with good works." And then the passage continues. And you see very clearly that this is in a worship context, actually. But I think the principle transcends even worship to life itself. "That women adorn themselves in modest apparel." Now, this certainly has to do with modesty from the standpoint of not creating lust or exposing certain parts of the body, but also just from the standpoint of not creating a scene, making yourself the one that's most noticeable, that people would look at you. That would not be humility or modesty. That would be pride and arrogance. Not dressing in a certain way to draw attention to yourself so that people would say, "Wow, look at that person." 1 Peter, we don't need to turn there, but let me read this also. 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 3 through 5 said, concerning the wife, the woman, "whose adorning, let it not be that outward adorning of plaiting of the hair, or wearing of gold, or putting on of apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart, in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. If God says something, by the way, is extremely valuable to him, boy, that ought to get our attention, right? Do you know what's extremely valuable to God? A woman who has a meek and quiet spirit. For after this manner in the old time, the holy women also who trusted in God adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands. It's interesting to me that God would say this is what he takes note of. Wow. I think, again, that's because it's so rare, so hard in our culture for women to have that kind of spirit. This is a woman who wants to honor, glorify the Lord in everything. Now, this is not saying that it's wrong to wear jewelry, to wear gold. Why? Because it says, whose adorning, let it not be that outward adorning of the plaiting of the hair, the wearing of gold, or the putting on of apparel. So this is not talking about don't wear clothing. It's talking about that what you wear, make sure that it's not drawing the wrong kind of attention. And again, back here in our passage, 1 Timothy chapter 2, especially in the context of worship, we need to be careful to dress modestly. Also, let me hasten to say that it's not wrong for a woman to dress in such a way that she looks beautiful. Because in Revelation chapter 21 and verse 2, we know that God is going to prepare his church as a bride adorned for her husband. That's something that's very appropriate, very right, very godly. But we're talking about dressing in such a way to draw attention in the wrong sort of way. So, women and men, because we'll throw the men in here on this one too, should dress in such a way that they're not drawing attention to themselves, creating lust or envy or question. Because how you dress often reflects your heart. All right, so we're going to come back to this. So, principle of modesty. Dressing in such a way that you're not drawing attention to yourself, creating lust or envy or question. Number two, the principle of appropriateness. Turn to Malachi chapter 1 and verse 8. And as you're turning there, I want to mention John 4:24, which is a well-known verse. God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. If we're going to worship God like he deserves, the Bible tells us we have to worship him in the right way, in truth. We have to follow what he says, and we were looking at that even when the second commandment deals with the manner in which we worship. That matters to God. You can't take the Ark of the Covenant and put it on the back of a cart just because the Philistines did that. Now, it matters to God. David had a sincere heart, but he was wrong. You can be sincere and wrong. And David was sincere. He was trying to honor God, but he was doing it the wrong way. So yes, how we do something does matter. It does matter to God. But also in spirit. Oh, that we would be born of God and walking in the Spirit, that we might rightly worship him like we should. So with that in mind, in Malachi chapter 1 in verse 8, and if ye offer the blind for sacrifice, is it not evil? And if you offer the lame and the sick, is it not evil? Offer it now unto thy governor. Will he be pleased with thee or accept thy person? Saith the Lord of hosts. And so, of course, the backdrop here is, can you imagine somebody who comes to the emperor, the king, the one who is all-powerful over the realm, and you come and you say, you know, here's a half-eaten lollipop for you. Thank you for being my king. Oh, that's not going to go over too well. Here's a present for you. I mean, it was too sickly to eat, so here you go. That's not going to go over well. You know, so it is when people go to meet an important figure. Isn't it true that they dress up for the occasion? Want to put their best foot forward? Tomorrow, my wife and I are going down to Washington, D.C., and the American Association of Christian Schools has a legislative conference this week. Pastor Parker's going down as well. And you know, something very interesting, when you walk into the halls of the Capitol, into those office buildings, it's interesting, people dress up. Because they know they're going to be talking, they may at any point be talking with somebody of real influence. Somebody with power. And they want to dress appropriately for the time. When we gather on Sunday morning for the purpose of corporate worship, who are we gathering before? The King of Kings. The Lord of Lords. We're coming before the throne of the Almighty God to worship Him in a worthy manner. We desire to offer our best to the Lord, not for our sake, but for His. Attitudes, actions, appearance, that's all very important. God is worth the very best we can offer. And so I believe we ought to wear the best we have, the best we can. I remember one time a gentleman said, "Pastor, I feel so uncomfortable." And this man at the time was actually homeless. He says, I don't have anything nice. All I have is a t-shirt and some shorts." And I said, "You know what? Don't worry about it. Come. That's okay." God obviously looks at the heart, not on the outward appearance. And so some have argued, and I understand where they're coming from. They say, "Pastor Ramler, you know, growing up, when I went to a church, it was just full of a bunch of hypocrisy, and people would dress up in their Sunday best, and the men would have their suits on, and the women would have their Sunday dresses, but they were just rotten to the core. And I was really turned off by that." And you said, "You know what? I just want to be genuine. I just want to be me before the Lord." And so they, you know, wear what they would normally wear. Because to them, to dress up in a suit or put a tie on or to put on your Sunday best, to them, they associated that with hypocrisy. And I said, okay, I can understand where you're coming from. So for them to wear a suit or put on a tie or, you know, wear a pair of Sunday shoes would be hypocrisy for them. It just wouldn't be them. In fact, it was interesting having this discussion. I says, "Well, let me share with you where I'm coming from. So when I come to church, I come to church like I'm approaching the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, offering up corporate worship together before our God. And is it not true that the priests, when they came before the altar, did they have to dress up for the occasion?" Now, we're not living in the Old Testament. My salvation is not dependent upon whether I have a suit or not on. I am accepted in the Beloved One. I'm not accepted because I'm in a suit. But you know, I'm a priest. That's one of the Baptist distinctives, right? The priesthood of the believer. I'm a priest. I ought to dress, especially as I come to offer praise corporately together before the Lord. All right, so a principle of modesty, a principle of appropriateness, a principle of distinction. Now, there's a verse in the Old Testament that growing up, I always heard this used. Deuteronomy 22:5, the woman shall not wear that which pertaineth unto a man, neither shall a man put on a woman's garment. And so they say, well, okay, you know, a woman should not wear a pair of pants because that's what pertains to a man. And then I began to realize, you know, there's other cultures out there, like in India, where the women would wear pants. In fact, there were a lot of cultures out there where the men would wear robes. So how does this apply cross-culturally here? Especially since the Bible wasn't written in the United States of America in the 20th century. And I really believe that Deuteronomy 22:5 really has more to do with transgenderism, and I would never have thought of this 20 years ago. But now I begin to realize, oh, God's trying to make a distinction between male and female. That's the principle there. And we have people today that want to just wipe out that distinction. But I don't really feel like that has some application. But I think really it's more appropriate when it comes to the distinction principle to consider verses like 1 John 2:15-16. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life, are not of the Father, but of the world. James 4:4, ye adulteresses and adulteresses, know ye not that the friendship of the world is enmity with God? Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God. And all of a sudden, my soul rises up and says, oh Lord, I do not want to give any attention or affection to that which is at war with you. That's the world. And so, I believe that a very appropriate application here is that we should stay clear of fashions that identify us with movements or ideals that are contrary to biblical values. For instance, we should not be wearing clothing that identifies us with a company that scorns biblical morality, or that identifies me with a subculture that flaunts respect for authority. All right, so what would you think if next Sunday you came in and I'm dressed goth? You'd probably think, oh, he's probably some sort of illustration or something. What? He's got, no, that's just the way I'm going to dress now. What? And so it is that there are certain ways in which you can dress. That there's nothing immodest about it. Sometimes it's very baggy, very loose clothing. But if it identifies me with a certain subculture or some ideal that is diametrically opposed to my wonderful Savior, I don't want to be a part of that. I want to be distinct from the world. Number four, submission. Oh boy, I knew you'd get to this, right? Submission. Well, let me start off with this verse, Ephesians 5:21. Submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. That includes everybody. Submitting ourselves one to another in the fear of God. Philippians 2:3-4. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem other better than themselves. Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. In fact, it's interesting. Let me give you a real life, last week example of this concept when it comes to submission. I'm the president of the Maryland Association of Christian Schools, and a question came up about sports games, especially basketball season. Are we going to allow any music before the games, during halftime, that sort of thing? Well, for years, the league has not allowed any kind of music whatsoever. And I will admit, when you're sitting in the gym before a basketball game and you just hear bounce, 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 and it's just kind of dead and just kind of, So we decide, you know, we're gonna go ahead and allow these fight songs like Tennessee or Michigan or, you know, Fighting Irish. Or, you know, we'll allow those to be played pregame and halftime. And then we had a new school who was joining the league. And he came up to me and says, oh, he says, we've got this palm group that likes to do this routine during halftime at our gym when we have visiting teams in. And but, you know, it's Christian music. Okay. I said, well, you know, I don't think this is going to – I'll listen to it, but – really, we have a policy, and I explained, we have a policy because sometimes what one person thinks is fine, another person says, ah, that is terrible. And it creates some friction and dissension and problems. And so, you know, I don't think this is going to be okay. We're making an exception here with these approved, you know, 50 different songs or whatever. So I got back with him and I listened to it and I read through the handbook. He says, no, we probably better be consistent here. And listen to this man's response. This encapsulates these principles I'm talking about. He says, thanks for getting back in touch. I'm totally fine with this, that you can't do this music during halftime at your game. I'm totally fine with this. And our palm coach was fine too. In fact, she actually took it a lot better than I even expected. I did point out that this is kind of a Romans 14 moment for us to put aside what we think is right and consider others around ourselves better than ourselves. Wait, I just slipped from Romans 14 to Philippians 2, didn't I? And I also pointed out, as you mentioned, that we have non-MACSAC schools coming in too, so we can save the halftime performance for that. Certainly not a big deal. Thanks anyway. Oh, my respect level for that man. I just went, ooh, wow. He doesn't agree, but that's okay. We won't do it because that could be a problem. We'll just submit to the league rules. Wow, that's wonderful. Submitting ourselves one to another. Hebrews 13:7 says, obey them that have the rule over you and submit yourselves, for they watch for your souls as they that must give account, that they may do it with joy and not with grief, for that is unprofitable for you. That's in the context of church submitting to the authority in the church, the pastor, the leaders of the church. Also, the idea of not making your brother to offend. 1 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 13. Wherefore, if meat make my brother to offend, I will eat no flesh while the world standeth, lest I make my brother to offend. And let me also add, scriptures also teach that children are to obey their parents and to honor their father and mother. And so if the parents say, you know, you're not going to wear that, then as children we have the opportunity to submit to our parents. All right, so we have these four kind of key principles: that of modesty, appropriateness, distinction, submission, and then this overarching idea of glorifying God with everything you do. You say, Pastor, why are you bringing this up? Well, let us make some application now. And I wrote this all out so I can stay on focus here. First of all, let me say this. People are welcome to attend our church no matter how they are dressed. As church members, we need to be prepared to overlook extreme appearances for the sake of ministering to each one in Christian love. And that follows principle number four. And I do believe that in the days ahead, we're going to have an increasingly chaotic society. And people will have, and you've already run into this, right? People, how can a person pierce their tongue? Oh. Anytime they talk like this because they got, oh, I just, or they've got something pierced right through their cheek and they're, oh, I just think, oh my. You know, there's a lot of hurting people, probably because of the piercings, but there's a lot of hurting people out there, seriously. And they'll have piercings, they'll have tattoos, they'll have weird hairstyles, weird colors, weird clothing. But you know what? They're a lost soul that needs Jesus Christ too. They're a person that Jesus died for. He cares about them. I ought to care too. And so if somebody comes in with orange hair that's 2 feet tall, and they come in and sit down, I'd like to see a bunch of our people go over and greet them, and some even sit with them. That's what we're here for. We're here to reach out and to minister. And I am concerned, too, because we've had, in the past, we've had some people that have left the church that were visiting and regularly and so forth, and then I'd say, hey, I noticed you stopped coming. Oh, yeah, Pastor, it's because somebody really got on us for what we wore, and it was that the lady was wearing a pair of slacks. Ah, well, I'm sorry if you felt like you were not invited or welcome, but it was too late. They had gone and had left. So, people come in. They're going to be dressed probably in all different ways, but this is an opportunity for us to show Christian love. Now, those men regularly ministering on the platform, a.k.a. Barry and me, at this point, we encourage a coat or suit and tie. Now, this does not include musicians who may need more freedom of movement, however, you know, should be dressed up as much as possible, because we're to be an example. We're leading in the worship. We ought to be an example of the believer. Now, obviously, exceptions are made for those with injuries, you know, with some medical condition. You know, you can't wear Sunday shoes. You got to wear flip-flops for whatever reason. I tell you one thing, I hate flip-flops. I think I would trip and kill myself walking on stairs with flip-flops. But sometimes that's a medical. We're not talking about legalism here. You've got to dress a certain way, otherwise you can't. No, we're talking about principles here. I want to give my best, and if there's some medical reason or whatever, that'll be very apparent, and it's not a problem. For our church members, of course, we encourage modest apparel. Why? So that we're not a hindrance to others in worship. We don't want to be distracting. Unless working with young children, we encourage all of our workers. This is Sunday morning, by the way. We're talking about Sunday morning dress. Unless working with young children, we encourage all workers to dress in their Sunday best out of respect for the one for whom we have gathered to worship. And that's, of course, principle one, principle two. Ushers will dress according to the usher policy dictated to them by the pastor, the head usher, and that's submission. Currently, our men wear a sport coat in the morning and a shirt and tie in the evening. And that can change, but the principle there is, hey, we want, this is the usher crew, this is the way we're going to dress, and you just, you know, as a Christian, you submit. If you join the usher crew, you're willing to do that when you serve. Choir members dress according to the policy dictated by the pastor and choir director. Choir members should not dress in such a way that would draw attention to themselves as different from other members. And again, is there anything spiritual with putting a tie on? No. I've seen a lot of very godly people that wore nothing but a t-shirt. But if you have a group of people up here, and they're all dressed with a coat and tie, and then a guy there in a t-shirt, guess who everyone's looking at? It's kind of like, wow, what happened there? You know? And then he gets like all these like anonymous gifts for money to go buy something, you know, buy. We don't want to create, hey, look at me, kind of. And that's why people wear choir robes, for instance. The choir, so everybody looks uniform. But we don't do that here. Nothing wrong with that. We just choose not to do that. Those engaged in special music should wear dressier clothing. Men should wear a sport coat or suit or shirt and tie. Women should wear modest attire appropriate for a Sunday morning worship service. That, again, is Principle 2, Principle 5. Sunday school teachers, children's church workers, and nursery, we recommend dressier clothing, but also recognize that sometimes pants may be more modest than dresses or skirts. Older clothing sometimes can be necessary depending on the activities being engaged in when working with small children. If you're going to be gluing stuff together, those crafts that the kids do, you know, and markers and glue, that's a recipe for disaster, right? We ask, though, that when working, serving in the nursery on Sunday mornings, working with children, that no shorts would be worn, because we desire to portray as professional and worshipful an environment as possible. What about Sunday and Wednesday evenings for those serving? Now, again, we're talking about those serving, not those who are attending, sitting in the church. Those men regularly ministering on the platform, bury me, should wear a sport coat or suit or shirt and tie. Now, notice I said those men regularly ministering. There will be occasions, perhaps, when we have a guest. The other day we had Mark Kittrell here, and he had on a real nice polo and I think khaki pants or something, dress pants. And I said, you don't have a tie on. Sorry. And I started to take my tie off to give to him, you know. And he looked horrified. I said, I'm just kidding. He had come to be our camp speaker, our school camp speaker, and he'd only brought one suit with him, and he had worn that on Sunday. And he was like, should I, Wednesday night, standing down on the floor talking. And so he just didn't wear a tie. I said, that's fine. That's not a problem. Again, we're not legalistic about these things. Wearing a tie doesn't make you any more powerful as a preacher or less powerful as a preacher. Sunday and Wednesday evening nursery, we ask that our nursery workers dress modestly and appropriately for the sometimes messy task of caring for our little ones. The only thing I'd ask is that we not, our ladies not, or our men even, not wear shorts when working in the nursery. Those working with children or teens should also dress modestly. This is like Wednesday nights. Should dress modestly and appropriately. Adults teach more by their example than by what they actually say. We know that. An adult worker will probably have more influence over children by how they act than even by what they say. So we want to set a good example for our young people. Thus, we want to be careful to communicate biblical principles in our dress. Because Wednesday nights in particular, there's more of a discipleship emphasis rather than a worship service emphasis. And due to the nature of more physical activities, female workers may wear skirts, pants, capris, culottes for classroom instruction, and even long shorts to the knee for when engaged in physical activities and games. Men may wear jeans or longer shorts as well. You say, wow, this sounds kind of legalistic to me, Pastor Rambler. Well, you have to draw a line somewhere, right? Let me ask you a question. Is there any inappropriate dress out there? Is there inappropriate clothing that a person could wear? Yes, right? There is. So where do we draw the line? Well, as a ministry, we have to draw a line somewhere, and this is where we draw it. Now, I am very embarrassed to admit this. Well, after I first came here as a pastor, I'm working out at the house. My house, of course, is right here, Parsonage, church property. And that we had a rule in the school that our students and our faculty and staff had to be dressed a certain way, had to be dressed appropriately when watching after-school activities. So I'm in, I think I had maybe a t-shirt on, some shorts. I'm working around the house, digging the garden, and the soccer game's going on, like 100 yards from where I'm standing. Oh, so I walk over there. In fact, I think Jack was playing. So I'm walking over there, watching the game. Oh, this is great, you know. I'm violating the policy. Now, who's going to tell the pastor that he's violating the policy? Thank you, Wayne. I know you would. But I'm glad you didn't. Pastor Parker called me into his office. He did it in a very kind, gracious, kind of embarrassed, sheepish way. Pastor, he's like, oh. Okay, now I have one of two opportunities to respond here, right? I could say, who are you to tell me what to do? Is there anything sinful about this? Come on, show me chapter and verse right here. I could have responded that way. I could have said, this place is so legalistic. Of course, I was the pastor of this place. This place is so legalistic. Or I could say, oh, man, I am so sorry. It slipped my mind. It won't happen again. So that's where submission comes into play. Nothing wrong with a pair of shorts. Nothing wrong with going to a game in a pair of shorts. But there was that policy. And, you know, nobody's above, or nobody should think that they're above the law, above the policy. And so when I was a young adult, I was teaching in a Christian university, and they had a policy that you could not, as a man, you could not wear jeans into town. Boy, some of you couldn't exist under that environment, right? Whoa. You know what? I just didn't hardly have any jeans then, because like on your day off on Saturday, how many times do you go into town? You always go into town, right? You're always running around doing stuff. So I just decided, you know, I'm going to wear a pair of khakis. So I had my junky khakis and then my nice khakis. And just wore khakis all the time. But you know what? Hey, I'm an employee. This is the expectation, the standard. Okay, you just go with it. They've changed that since, by the way. But didn't help me back then, of course. But then, it's interesting, it came to the place where I had students. I was teaching in an academy situation, high school. Students who told their parents that I thought that wearing jeans was sinful. Like, oh, well, it's not, I guess it is sinful, right? If your authority tells you not to do it and you do it, that would be sinful. But a pair of jeans itself is not sinful. Ladies, a pair of jeans is not sinful. And so I decided, you know what, we've got this skiing activity. I was going to be chaperoning the young people. I decided to go out and buy a pair of jeans and wear it on the ski activity. So I would say that I didn't think that jean material was sinful. And had to explain, it's not a matter of the article of clothing itself, it's a matter of submission to authority. There's nothing wrong. And it was okay for me, by the way, to wear the jeans on the ski activity. That was not a problem. And so, it is that as a church, to kind of summarize, we want everybody who comes seeking, everyone who comes to hear the Word of God preached here, we want them to feel welcome and accepted no matter how they appear. But I do believe that as a Christian, we ought to have a desire to present our best to our Lord. And so we ought to dress our best. Those of you who may be serving, you dress appropriately. When you're working with young kids, that may be most appropriate to have women a pair of slacks, men even a pair of jeans for that. But I want us... this overarching principle to guide us, that whether we eat or drink or whatsoever we wear, we wear all to the glory of God.